dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for the war of ideas. We wait here every day, every weekday, and we're doing it today with several of the best in the business. Douglas Murray of the Center for Social Cohesion from Britain will tell us what Britain is exporting once again this Christmas time. Terrorism. And why? And what it means for us, not just in terms of being at the receiving end, but in terms of the insights into the threat Sharia poses to Western societies, now manifesting itself more and more and more in the United Kingdom, but coming soon to a theater near you, namely the United States of America. Segment three, we'll be talking with Eric Steckelbeck, the star of CBN News, whose terrorism program is really required viewing. He has done a marvelous program recently on the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, the IRGC, with an inside look into what it is about and what the kinds of threats are that it poses to all of us. Fascinating stuff. You'll want to be catching that in segment three with Eric Steckelbeck. In segment four, Sarah Carter, our duty inside the Pentagon expert, will be talking about the Afghan review released today by the Obama administration. Are we getting this right? Or are we simply pressing on in a doomed enterprise? And what will it mean, not just for our troops in Afghanistan, but for all of us? That and much, much more with Sarah Carter. But first, I want to share with you the fact that I am an angry man. In fact, I'm furious at what I see going on in an institution that I once had the privilege of working in, the United States Senate, and indeed the Congress more generally. There is nothing short of a naked abuse of power underway at the moment. As members of the House and Senate who have been repudiated at the polls hijack the will of the American people and persist in the behavior that caused them to be repudiated at the polls, we are now in the midst of what can only be described as a melee of spending and legislating and perhaps even treaty making that will, I'm quite certain, be seen over time by historians as one of the nadirs, the low points of American government. There is now an omnibus bill for continuing the spending of the United States government that Harry Reid in the Senate, the majority leader there, and Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House for a few more days, thank God, are trying to jam down the throats of the members of the United States House and Senate and the American people. It is a $1.2 trillion spending bill, some 1,900 pages long, with 6,000 earmarks in it. Does this sound like the sort of thing that is responsive to the sentiments of the American people just a month ago? I hardly think so. What do you think? What do you think about having your senators, your members of Congress, acting in this fashion? Now, certainly not all of them are doing so, but the majority in both the House and Senate apparently are. But that's just part of what they're trying to do. during this lame duck session. They're also trying to jam down the throats of the United States military the radical homosexual agenda, a freestanding piece of legislation repealing the law enacted in 1993 prohibiting avowed homosexuals from serving in the United States military, passed the House pretty much on a party line vote. Again, an action that would not happen in the next session of Congress, and they're trying to make it happen with the zombie Congress, the living dead that occupy for just a few more days. Thank God. Seats in the United States House of Representatives. And the same is in the offing in the Senate, where Harry Reid apparently is going to be pushing that forward as well in the Senate, this freestanding legislation repealing what's wrongly but inevitably called Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And then there's the START Treaty, the new START Treaty, a treaty that we talked about quite a bit here lately and will continue to be talking about in the days ahead, because this treaty is inimical to American security interests. This treaty is, I believe, an affront to the historical approach to dealing with these sorts of matters, nuclear deterrence, in a thoughtful, deliberate, and informed way. The United States Senate only really heard, with I think two exceptions in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee at least, only heard from advocates of this treaty. Now, not surprisingly, members of the Senate are inclined to think that there's nothing wrong with it. There's plenty wrong with this treaty. There's plenty wrong with the idea that we're going to leave the Russians with thousands more nuclear weapons than we have. There's plenty wrong with a treaty that is unverifiable. There's plenty wrong with a treaty that is going to infringe upon our conventional prompt global strike options. There's plenty wrong with a treaty that absolutely, positively will make it more difficult for the American people to be protected against ballistic missile attack. There's plenty wrong with a treaty that is being forced through the Senate in the few days remaining before Christmas with the calculation that that will preclude a debate, an informed, thoughtful, intelligent debate about what is really at stake here, namely the future security of the United States, especially as we are now constraining our nuclear deterrent. We are now, if the Senate goes along with this, affirming the Obama administration's decision to get rid of our nuclear deterrent at the very moment that the rest of the world, including a whole bunch of countries that are not in any way, shape, or form encumbered by this treaty, are building up ever more threatening capabilities and the ballistic missiles with which to deliver them, even from places like Venezuela, in cahoots with Iran, as we'll be talking about later in the program. These are the sorts of things that should infuriate our countrymen, especially when they're compounded by all of the other items on this agenda, all of which is being abusively forced through the United States Congress in these lame duck days. This is not acceptable. If you are angry as I am, I entreat you, make your voices heard now, while there's still time. Tell your members of Congress not to go this route. Tell your senators not to support the START Treaty and these other travesties. And do it today. Make your voice heard. Make it heard now. Please. Next up, Douglas Murray on the Islamists in Britain and what it means for you. Straight ahead.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
The holidays come and go, but the pictures are forever. How do you want to look? Now is a perfect time to make a new start for the new year ahead. And the first step is calling Judy Singer's MetaSystem at 800-711-JUDY.
On the MetaSystem, I lost 10 pounds the first week, and overall, I think it was 12 weeks, I lost 46 pounds.
Over the past 3 months, I've lost approximately 47 pounds.
With the MetaSystem, I lost 50 pounds.
Looking slimmer and feeling better isn't the whole story. Call 800-711-JUDY right now. The MetaSystem has worked effectively for thousands, and it can and will work for you. And with your MetaSystem purchase by December 29th, Judy Singer will take 10% off and throw in a free Go Anywhere tote as your Christmas gift. If you're already on MetaSystem, call and see what we've got waiting for you. Say goodbye to the old you. Say hello to the new you. Judy Singer's MetaSystem works. Call now, 800-711-JUDY. That's 800-711-JUDY. J-U-D-Y.
Terrorist threats, global economic recession, monumental government spending, continued job losses, healthcare reform. Who can sort all of this out? Hudson Institute. Since its founding nearly 50 years ago, Hudson Institute continues to lead the pack in groundbreaking policy research. John McCain said Hudson continues to make the world less threatening to our security and more hospitable to our values. To read the latest commentary and research from Hudson's world-renowned policy experts, visit our website at www.hudson.org. You can sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, keep up to date on our latest events, podcasts, and exclusive video features, and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Visit www.hudson.org.
This is the greatest country in the world. Every day, people in America live in 100% freedom. Our military allows us to do that. It's comforting to know that when American lives are lost in defense of our freedom, an organization like TAPS is there to help the friends and families of those who have died while serving our country.
TAPS, the Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors. Visit us online at TAPS.org or call 1-800-959-TAPS.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We are joined by Douglas Murray, one of our friends and colleagues from across the pond. He is the founder and director of the Center for Social Cohesion, a superb organization monitoring and warning about the extent to which Sharia is being insinuated into his own country and more generally the threat that it poses to all of us. Fresh from an appearance on Fox News this morning, we have with us Douglas Murray. Thank you so much for joining us here at Secure Freedom Radio, Douglas, and holidays greetings to you.
It's a great place to be with you as always, Frank, and to you.
Thank you very much. Listen, much to discuss about the UK. Tell us, Douglas, most immediately about this bomber. I think you've described him as an export, Christmastime export from the UK that turned up in Stockholm, blowing himself to pieces and killing a few other folks. What is this a sample of, in your estimation, that we all should be concerned about?
Well, I mean, here is an absolutely extraordinary case. But one that has become typical. This is an Iraqi-born man who ended up coming to Britain to study at university, in a university in Luton, in England. And he got radicalized, he got sent into radical Islam whilst at university in Luton. And last Saturday, the people of Stockholm had to pay for it because he became a suicide bomber in Stockholm whilst people were trying to do their Christmas shopping. This is an absolutely extraordinary example, except for the fact, as I say, that it's becoming something of a tradition. You remember that last year it was Omar Farouk Abdul Muttalab, radicalized whilst at the University College in London, who tried to bring down an airplane over Detroit. In 2001, it was Richard Reed, a British citizen, who tried to blow up a plane on its way to America with a device in his shoes. The Christmas Day before, in 2000, a British man went to Kashmir and blew himself up and nine other people in a suicide bombing in Kashmir. This is a really bizarre thing. If you said to British people 2 decades ago that one of Britain's most famous Christmas exports would be suicide bombers, they'd have laughed at you. But when it happens, there's absolutely nothing amusing about it. It's a tragedy and one that keeps on repeating itself.
Well, let's talk a little bit about why this is happening, in your estimation, Douglas Murray. What is it about what's going on in the United Kingdom at the moment that is giving rise to this kind of export product, if you will, or more to the point, the kind of climate in which these folks are being, I'm not sure whether radicalized is the term best suited to the phenomenon, but at least brought to the violent acts of jihad in which they're engaging?
Well, you know, several things. I mean, I was speaking at a conference yesterday, a panel in front of security experts, counterterrorism practitioners in the UK. And they kept asking, what is it we could do in terms of ABC? And I said, that, you know, you come up with all sorts of complex solutions. And in fact, it's quite simple. You need to enforce the laws of the land as they currently stand. It is already illegal to recruit for terror groups in this country. Yet there are, for instance, Hamas operatives running around the UK raising money as we speak. We know their names, but they don't get rounded up. They don't get arrested. They don't get deported. When you have a climate in a country where you permit the impermissible, then it's no surprise people take a lesson from it. It's no surprise that they think, well, if those guys can do it, so can I, because there is no punishment for doing things that should be punishable. It's a combination of that, and secondly, and we can't avoid this, it is the institutionalization of political correctness. It is political correctness at its ultimate endpoint, which is suicidalism. People who would rather be killed or would rather see others killed than to be accused themselves of being, for instance, Islamophobic, the big new bogey word of our era. It's Islamophobic to criticize jihadi preachers going around campuses in the UK. It's Islamophobic to point out that they're calling for the murder of minorities. It's Islamophobic to point out that you shouldn't have preachers going around teaching young people that Britain and America are the great and little Satans. This is the problem, and it's a fatal one.
Yes, it is. It's absolutely suicidal, as you say, to engage in it. We're speaking with Douglas Murray, the founder and director of the Center for Social Cohesion. Douglas, you've done a book, and I don't have the title of it at hand recently, out of the center, that is really important in terms of documenting much of what you've just described. Remind me of its title.
It's called Islamist Terrorism, the British Connections, and it's the first study of its kind, a 10-year-long survey of all of the Islamists who've been convicted of terrorism-related offences in the UK. And so it's the first time we've been able to show and document and analyse the facts about these people. And, you know, it backs up what some of us, Frank, you, myself and others have been saying for years. In fact, you can profile a terrorist, and if you can profile a terrorist, you should profile a terrorist. You know, not only is it clear in Britain that the vast majority of young males of Pakistani origin, that is the typical profile. And furthermore, some of the myths that we've been told by the left and others for years are busted by it. Terrorists in Britain are not actually, you know, disproportionately, you know, disadvantaged poor people who go into Islamist terrorism because they have no other job opportunities. In fact, they're disproportionately well-educated. They're people who've been to university, as we see again the other day. These people have enjoyed all all of the advantages that a wealthy liberal state can give, and they've turned against it. And if people don't learn from that, then I don't know what they will learn from.
Well, this is often called the underlying causes explanation for this jihadism,
yeah.
And it's what we reflexively revert to, particularly here in the United States, but I think in the United Kingdom as well, Douglas Murray, when we don't want to confront what is actually animating them, which is what they call Sharia and their program for bringing it to all of us. Douglas, I want to just touch on one thing and then give you a closing comment. Quickly, tell us about the U.S. ambassador's visit to the East London Mosque and how that fits into this sort of political correctness and fear of Islamophobia and so on.
Well, this is a very interesting example because, just a couple of weeks ago, the American ambassador in London visited the East London Mosque. East London Mosque and its twin, the London Muslim Centre, have for years been one of the hubs in the UK of Islamist ideology, specifically of a branch of it from the Indian subcontinent, represented by the extreme political party Jamaat-e-Islami. And the American ambassador ended up the other week at this noble visit to this institution. I mean, it's not surprising in some ways. The mayor of London, Boris Johnson, has been there. The Prince of Wales has been there. You know, this is how you dignify extreme Islamist movements, by going and making nice with them. And I have to say, I mean, I expect it, sadly, from our degraded politicians here. But to have the American ambassador blessing this institution as well is astonishing. You know, again, you don't have to get involved in the theological arguments within Islam. You don't have to get involved in any of this. All you have to do is not go and dignify fascist movements of whatever kind. And you don't go to institutions that preach a fascist ideology and dignify them and give them the boost of thinking they might be on the right track.
Yeah, well, and signaling to all of the others in the Muslim community that they are the go-to people, they are the leaders.
Very briefly,
this is in fact not, I'm afraid, political correctness. This is submission, and it is an invitation under their threat doctrine to redouble the efforts to force us to feel subdued. We have exactly a minute left with you, Douglas Murray of the Center for Social Cohesion. Let me just ask you very quickly, very succinctly, in your inimitable British way, tell us why what is going on in Britain that you've just described is a warning to us as well.
Well, because we in Britain have fallen for the narrative that America is also now falling for. And it is this. It is the idea that that once you are attacked by radical Islam, you must come up with a solution. You must. It's true. I think you should kill your enemies and get rid of them and clear them out of the public space. But we have fallen for this, and you are now falling for it too, that the answer to radical Islam is another type of Islam. The answer to a guy flying a plane into a twin tower is to build a mosque beside it. This is the big lie of our time. The answer to radical Islam is free and open societies defending themselves and their democratic principles. And instead, we're falling for the idea that we should fall into defending and claiming a new type of Islam.
Accommodating it. We have to leave it at that. Douglas, thank you. Bless you, and keep up the great work, my friend. Come back soon. Merry Christmas. Next up, Eric Stackelbeck on another aspect of this inside the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Can I have a price check on aisle... ma'am?
Yeah.
Don't look down, but there's a giant python wrapped around your leg.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's probably nothing.
Nothing? Shouldn't I don't know, like, call someone?
No, I don't have the time. I'm late as it is. If it keeps up, I haven't looked at.
Are you sure? That's a pretty big snake.
No, I'm fine. Thank you, though. You're very sweet.
You wouldn't ignore this, so why ignore the signs of a stroke? If you or someone you know suddenly experiences numbness of the face, arm, or leg, or sudden trouble speaking, seeing, or walking, don't wait to get help. Call 911 right away, because time lost is brain lost. To find out more, visit www.strokeassociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE. This message brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a non-profit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
This morning, a woman reached out. A man stepped up. A family drove their elderly neighbor to the doctor. Someone took 2 hours of their morning to help someone else find affordable childcare near work. Somebody sat down with 16-year-old Stephen and taught him better note-taking skills and study habits, and suddenly, toughing it out till graduation seemed to Stephen a pretty good idea. All this happened today. It'll happen tomorrow. It's happening here, there, right down the street. People are living united. We're not just wearing the shirt, we're living it. We're realizing that the way we live our lives can impact the way others live theirs, their education, their income, even their health. So do something, any little something, as long as it's something. Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
I'll pick you up after school. Okay, I got it.
It's easy to take a day for granted. You and your family are connected by routine, and you stick to it. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? What if your day's routine is disrupted and you can't reach your family? Have you planned for that? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit. Make a plan. Be informed. Today. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Ready.gov. This message brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
Make Facebook your source for essential national security analysis. Search for Frank Gaffney and add him to your friends list.
Welcome back. We're joined by Eric Stackelbeck. I think of him as the star of CBN News. He's Stackelbeck on Terror is a must viewing TV program on some of the most important issues of our time. And I think the most recent program, Eric, really is a perfect example of why that's so. Congratulations on your program about the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. And I want to visit with you a little bit about the insights that that you took away from it. So welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio.
Hey, thanks, Frank, and great to be here.
You visited with a man who had been a member of the IRGC, as it's called, Reza Khalili. And you protected his identity, of course, on camera, but what he had to say was very troubling indeed. Give us some insights into the kinds of problems that that Reza and you discussed on your program, Stackelbeck on Terror, and what the implications of those revelations are for us here in the United States.
Well, Frank, this may have been the most eye-opening interview I've ever done, bar none. This guy worked inside Iran's Revolutionary Guards Corps, which, as you know, is the most powerful and influential arm of the Iranian regime involved in international terrorism. They have a military wing, very bad actors, to say the least. So
nuclear weapons as well, as I recall,
nuclear
right?
Nuclear weapons as well, involved in, and they also have a multi-million dollar business empire. So they only answer to the supreme leader in Iran. Reza Khalili, who I interviewed, was spying undercover for the CIA inside the Revolutionary Guards for almost 10 years. And Frank, some of the observations he shared with me, as you said, were frightening. Number one, he believes, based on his inside information being in that regime, Iran will use nuclear weapons against Israel, against European capitals. There's not a doubt in his mind about that. Number two.
And that they may use Hezbollah proxies to affect that kind of devastation.
Yes. He said they will. It's a done deal. They will pass those nukes off when, if and when they acquire that capability. Number two, he talked about, I think one of the main things, the ideology behind all this in Iran. They are true believers. When they talk about wiping Israel off the map, when they talk about America's days being numbered, they truly mean it. He related to me that this is drilled into their heads day after day after day. The ideology of martyrdom, of jihad, is drilled in their heads every day. They're true believers, and U.S. government officials can't just take what they say with a grain of salt and say, well, they're just kind of spouting off. No. They truly mean this.
Yeah, Eric, let me ask about this specifically, this the role in that ideology, which is not just Sharia, as we've talked about before many times, Eric Stackelbeck. It is bad enough that they are seeking this sort of supremacist end state in which the world will be ruled by Sharia and a supreme leader of some kind, a caliph, what have you, that is going to implement it. But the 12th imam piece of this and its aspects and implications are really chilling. Tell us about that.
Yeah, Frank, well, I quote him here. He told me this is truly a messianic regime, and they truly believe that the 12th imam will return to usher in the end times, to usher in the apocalypse. He called that the ultimate day in Islam for the mullahs, for the Revolutionary Guards.
Eric, excuse me, just one second. Could you just repeat that? There was a break just as you said the 12th imam. Repeat that last sentence, if you would,
I'll
the quote.
Repeat it. Okay.
3, 2, 1.
So they truly believe this. They truly believe that the 12th imam, this is a messianic regime, the 12th imam will return to usher in what they call the Day of Justice in Islam. It's drilled into their head on a daily basis. But Frank, one thing I have to mention, the most important thing to come out of this interview with Reza Khalili, the former Iranian Revolutionary Guards member, was this. He told me in great detail about the role mosques in the West, in Europe and the U.S., play in Iranian operations, and I'm going to quote him here, Frank, directly. Mosques in the West are used by the Iranians as recruitment centers for backdoor meetings, transfer of arms and cash, and for putting together terrorist activities, and I was involved in some of these meetings. Now, you wonder why we oppose a mosque at Ground Zero. You wonder why we oppose mosques in rural America, Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Here you have it from the horse's mouth. The Iranians, among others, are using these mosques to plot, finance terrorism, and they're a national security threat.
Now, Eric Stackelbeck, does that apply even though most of these mosques in the United States have been funded by the Saudis and are presumably of the Sunni tradition rather than Shia, as is practiced in Iran? Is there still that kind of collaboration and exploitation of these facilities and their personnel?
Frank, that was the first question I had. I said, hey, what about the Sunni-Shia difference there? And he said, no. Across the board, he said, also in Sunni mosques, in Europe, he witnessed the Iranians reaching out to Afghans, to Turks, to Pakistanis. So there is some synergy there, according to this former Revolutionary Guards member.
Right. We're speaking again with Eric Stackelbeck of CBN News. He is the host of Stackelbeck on Terror. He's a man who has written extensively and reported brilliantly on many of the most important issues of our time. And we've been talking about the latest of your reports, Eric, on the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. And just before we leave that, I want to very quickly just emphasize that this messianic vision of the 12th Imam's return ushering in the golden age of Islam and so on is so alarming because, unbeknownst to most of us, what is supposedly going to trigger the return of the 12th Imam is something that looks a lot like the apocalypse. And if that is something that can be triggered by the use of these nuclear weapons in Europe or against Israel or, who knows, against us by the Iranians, I fear that fits in with this program. So thank you so much for this incredible report, Eric. Let me turn quickly to a related subject, namely that Iran has apparently arranged with Venezuela to put some of the ballistic missiles, which may in due course be equipped with nuclear weapons, in Venezuela, in due course, presumably having the capability to reach the United States from such a forward base. What do we know about that, and should we be alarmed given what you've just told us about it?
This seems like a done deal, Frank. I think there's no doubt that Iran will move missiles, and I think they're already in the process of moving missiles into Venezuela. I did a report last month showing that Iran is mining for uranium in Venezuela. Venezuela has a huge uranium deposit. Iran needs uranium for the nuclear weapons program. They're mining for uranium in Venezuela. They have weapons factories in Venezuela. We actually had satellite footage, Frank, provided to us from Roger Noriega, a former State Department official. Iran has a so-called tractor factory in Venezuela. In reality, it's a weapons factory. So what we have brewing in our backyard, in the Western Hemisphere, is another Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yeah, very threat. Very apt. Eric, quickly, we've only got about 2 minutes left. This is coming, a ballistic missile base for Iran, which, as you said, is absolutely ideologically committed to destruction of the West, including the United States.
This administration won't stop it.
Well, I want to get on at that point. We've just had the second failure, I'm very sorry to say, of a test of our anti-missile system in the past 24 hours or so. This suggests to me, but I want your assessment of it, somebody who follows these things very closely, that perhaps this is the second of these failures in this, within the year, that maybe this is beginning to manifest, what is beginning to manifest, perhaps, is the administration's hostility to missile defense, its determination to lower the priority of it, its cuts in the budget of the missile defense program, and, not least, as we've been talking about earlier in the program, its efforts in the New START treaty context to constrain our missile defenses in the future, even as the sorts of threats we've just been talking about from Iran and Venezuela and elsewhere are growing. Is there reason to be concerned that we are not doing what we can and need to be doing in the missile defense area, Eric Stackelbeck?
Oh, Frank, there's every reason. You've done brilliant work on this in the Center for Security Policy on exposing the folly of this START treaty. Look, this administration is ideologically opposed rigidly across the line to missile defense. That much is clear, and they seem to want to kowtow to the Russians, who at the same time are arming America's enemies, including Venezuela. Heavily arming Venezuela to the tune of billions of dollars, and Russia is going to help Venezuela build a nuclear plant in our backyard. This administration, we talked about it many times, Frank, ideologically, this is far, far to the left, no interest in foreign policy. President Obama is consumed with his domestic policy of, in his words, remaking America. So missile defense will not happen under this administration. So it's going to be scrapped under this administration, and our defenses, as you said, Iran in our backyard in Venezuela with missiles, the EMP threat, we're in trouble.
We are in trouble indeed. Eric Stackelbeck, we're going to have to leave it at that. Thank you so much for the terrific program on the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, for sharing with us your insights on it and so much more. We'll look forward to visiting with you again in the very near future. Next up, we'll be talking with Sarah Carter about the Afghan review. Is the administration getting this right or dangerously wrong? Straight ahead.
Miss a show? Find podcasts of Frank and the world's leading national security experts and policymakers at securefreedomradio.org.
My name is Sunday Hollis, and I totally lost the cravings for sweets. I totally lost the cravings for bread, even meat. And some people, you know, you would see people say, oh, well, you're eating a salad because you're trying to diet, but you just don't have a taste for any of the junk anymore. And it is so, so, so true. Now, I'm thinking this is something that the celebrities are using. They're just not giving the meta system the credit for it. I've tried everything under the sun, and this is the only product that I have even called the company and asked them, could I sell it for them? This is a product where you can actually use the word awesome. I mean, and it is the whole essence of the word awesome.
Don't wait another minute to start losing weight. Call Judy Singer's The Meta System at 1-800-711-JUDY. That's 1-800-711-JUDY.
Terrorist threats, global economic recession, monumental government spending, continued job losses, healthcare reform. Who can sort all of this out? Hudson Institute. Since its founding nearly 50 years ago, Hudson Institute continues to lead the pack in groundbreaking policy research. John McCain said Hudson continues to make the world less threatening to our security and more hospitable to our values. To read the latest commentary and research from Hudson's world-renowned policy experts, visit our website at www.hudson.org. You can sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, keep up to date on our latest events, podcasts, and exclusive video features, and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Visit www.hudson.org.
Ever since he was a radical college student, Barack Obama has fancied a world without nuclear weapons. Now, as president, he's made the realization of that vision U.S. policy. In fact, the only country in the world Barack Obama can denuclearize is ours. He seeks to do that through a New START treaty that would make deep cuts in America's nuclear deterrent, but won't have any comparable effect on any other nuclear power. He hopes the U.S. Senate won't notice that his treaty is unverifiable and restricts our anti-missile defenses, that Russia always cheats, and that our arsenal hasn't been upgraded in decades. Worse yet, he insists that this defective treaty be hastily rubber-stamped during the short post-election lame-duck session. If this sounds crazy to you, tell your senators to vote no on the New START treaty. This is no time to be disarming America.
Fire took place 3 years ago. There was a lightning strike. The winds picked up and the fire just took off. You're in shock. You don't know what you're feeling. You have nothing. I lost my home and 40 years worth of art. I never thought that I would need help from the Red Cross. They gave me emotional support to get up in the morning. I'll never forget what the Red Cross did for me.
Contact your local Red Cross chapter or visit redcross.org.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney. Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We're joined by Sarah Carter, who, in addition to being the superb national security correspondent for the Washington Examiner, she was also the star of a panel program we had last week up in New York. The Center for Security Policy convened on national security and the new media. And Sarah, you were terrific in that setting, talking about the challenges of journalists doing the kind of work that you do so well and so courageously, I might add. And it's great to have you here with us today, as it was last week. So thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, it's great to be with you, Frank. It was wonderful to be in New York last week, too.
Terrific. Thank you. Let's start with the news of the day. The administration released the Afghan review of its strategy and its performance to date. What is your takeaway from all of that for both the fight in Afghanistan specifically and what I call the war for the free world more generally?
Well, I think the review, you know, definitely shows that there's been some progress made, particularly in the battle against the Taliban, the work of our U.S. Special Forces, particularly CIA drone strikes, which have been, I think, enormously successful in targeting some of the major leaders in the tribal belt. But the review is somewhat tilted. I mean, even though the review states that some of this progress you know, is reversible if things don't move forward with the mission. The review itself is not actually telling the whole tale, and that's really unfortunate. And this comes from a number of sources, my time spent in Afghanistan, and the folks that are experts in the region. You know, there's a lot of problems with the Afghan security forces. They've had extraordinary problems from drug use to failure to show up for work, and an enormous amount of difficulty organizing these groups.
And, so, and in some cases, they have been the vehicles for attacks on our forces as well, murderous
attacks.
Absolutely.
In some cases, they have been. And not only that, they've had problems with them in the Kandahar region, stealing equipment off the bases and selling them on the black market. Some of them, like you said, have attacked some of our troops and are infiltrators for the Taliban. So this is going to take a much longer time than the Obama administration would like. The Obama administration is still pushing for the beginning of a drawdown in July 2011, even though they've talked about the 2014 date over the recent months. We see that the administration is now pushing back again and saying, okay, well, 2014, we're going to stick around, we're going to be there, but in July 2011, we're going to start bringing some of our troops home. The fear is that we're not going to get the job done. And I think for a lot of military commanders, a lot of folks that have been heavily involved in this mission, even in putting together the original strategy, it's disheartening. It's like, wait a minute, let's not leave until this job gets done. And let's take out some of the most important leaders here, you know, particularly, I mean, in the insurgent groups and Al-Qaeda, before we say we've had some success here, because right now we're not seeing that success.
Yeah. It's so transparent that the case for withdrawing forces on the previously scheduled timetable is ill-advised and counterproductive, and to have this review affirming it in the face of that growing evidence is worrying. I just wonder, Sarah Carter, particularly as you have done such a marvelous job for the Washington Examiner in country, what you think the troops on the ground, our folks on the ground, are probably taking away from this kind of seemingly quite politicized and quite skewed assessment of reality.
Our troops on the ground are smart as a whip. You know, it's funny, whenever they hear things like this coming out of Washington, I hear them laughing. They usually spend most of their time, you know, sitting around going, wow, this has just been so politicized. This is such a joke. Why don't they come down here and put themselves on the front line? Why don't they see what's really going on in this village? And sometimes, in some cases, they might have some, I mean, obviously there are some successes. Those successes, though, have to be met with the capability to hold those regions and keep those successes, those battles, that push of the Taliban out of those provinces for a sustained period of time. And that's something that we have not seen yet. So even if they're looking at the review, let's say for the past, you know, 4 months or the last 5 months or the last 18 months, they have to be able to see those successes sustain themselves for the next year. And if you look at the two, there's two national intelligence estimates that are going to offer a much different picture of Afghanistan and Pakistan than what we were seeing in today's release. And
when are those due out?
Those are due out. They're coming out, I believe, I'm hoping before the end of this year, but I don't think so. I think it's at the beginning of the next year. And I'm not quite sure because the story originally broke this past week in the New York Times. I spoke to some folks on the Hill about this and others who have had an opportunity to look at the summary. And I've also spoken to people in the intelligence community. And, you know, they're offering the same kind of assessments, the same things that I've been telling you from my trips to Afghanistan is the same responses that we're getting out of these national intelligence estimates. We need to be there longer. This is not ready to go. We're not ready to go yet. You know, Afghanistan is particularly prone to Pakistan, and Pakistan isn't doing their job in the North Waziristan area where Al-Qaeda and the insurgents are hiding. So there's a lot of pressure right now in this administration, and I think that we're seeing a break between what the administration wants and what the intelligence and military community actually sees.
Well, we'll be following this very closely with you, Sarah Carter, because as you know, this it would not be unprecedented for an administration to politicize the intelligence findings. The Bush administration was incessantly accused of doing so. I'm not persuaded that they did, but we certainly have seen it in the past. The Clinton administration, notably on missile threats and others, and I suspect there may be before the final national intelligence estimates are out on these two very problematic countries, Afghanistan and Pakistan, some changes that are not currently in the print. So watch this space, and we will with you, Sarah Carter. But let me turn quickly to two other topics, Sarah. You have been following closely, I know, the real concerns that have been expressed by folks in uniform about the prospect that the Congress is now poised to impose what I think of is really the radical homosexual agenda on the United States military. We've talked about this in the context of the survey that was done, the report, which is being used really to provide, I guess, political cover to politicians about this. What do you think is the prospect for this wrongly described, so don't ask, don't tell, legislation being enacted in the Congress, and the implications that it would have for our armed forces?
Well, it looks like if the Senate doesn't pass it now, the courts will, and that's what everyone's saying. And I received some information the other day from folks at the Defense Department that were saying that, look, this is going to pass no matter what. Their reasoning behind it was, look, we want this to be an easier transition. The arguments, an easier transition. We don't want it to be rushed. As soon as the courts decide, it'll be too short notice for us to do anything about this to make it happen the right way, so we might as well go forward. Of course, you see the concerns. There's concerns on both sides. You have folks in the military who do not want to see this end, who are very upset about it, feel that it's a problem to even be dealing with this at this point in time. Some of the Congress has said that the cost is going to be too much. They also say that it's going to be a problem on the morale of our troops. And then you have the other side who says, look, there's nothing we can do about it. Let's just let this thing happen and let's just move forward. So right now, this is definitely a huge time in history for both our military and our country, and changes are coming. It just remains to be seen what the Senate will decide to do if the Senate moves forward and if the courts decide to pass this.
Well, my own feeling about this is rubbish. I think the courts have historically, certainly the higher level courts, said no. This is a constitutional act and may be maintained. We've had one federal judge say otherwise, and that's being used as a sort of battering ram to push this thing through. I think it's a terrible mistake. And Sarah, as you know from your time with the forces, particularly those in the combat arms, are very concerned. And if they vote with their feet, as they have been told to do by the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, we are in a world of hurt because we will break the United States Armed Forces in time of war. We mustn't let that happen. Sarah Carter, thank you so much for joining us and giving us your assessment of these two important topics. We will be following them with you, as always, in the days ahead. And thank you again for joining us.
Thank you so much, Ray.
That's it for this installment of Secure Freedom Radio. Thank you as well for joining us. We're always happy to have you with us and hope you'll be there again, same time, same station tomorrow. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.